find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hey, this is Blake from the band Saul, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey, hello everybody. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. What that means is you have tuned in to a radio style podcast here. And that we're close to 330 episodes, something like that. Mike, how are you?
Do you really need to explain the show?
I don't know.
Every single time out here? I mean, I know it's good to have an intro and say, hey, this is Verbal Shenanigans, but at the same time, it's like, you know, they're on the app. They see what they clicked on. I feel they have a rough idea.
Well, I like to think, like, if people are clicking on guests, like, hey, Tim Russ is on the podcast. I want to click on that. They click on it for the first time, and they're like, what is this? You know, what is this show? And we usually don't get to our guests for about 20 to 30 minutes. And we hear, like, you talking about your magic formula. They might have no idea what's going on.
Well, now you just had every person listening to the show hit the fast forward, let's say, to 15 seconds. So they hit it 80 times now.
I don't know. Somewhere along the line, I think I was reading an article where you should introduce your podcast each time and tell people what it's about and what they're tuning into. So, like, for instance, I'm Scott and you are Mike. I feel like we should say that. If someone's tuning in right now, they're like, oh, you know, Mike is so charming and amazing at the intros, and I don't want to be mistaken for that.
Like, maybe we should just, like, screw with people's minds. Like, next week, say something like, you know, we got Ben Affleck on the show, and then it's a murder mystery.
Here's the thing. Podcast. Here's the problem with that. Nobody would notice. I mean, no, lots and thousands of fans would notice. There'd be an uproar. Times are tough. But anyway, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. October is here, Mike. October is here, and you know it's a good time to realize that you're in safe hands in this country, and the harmony between people has never been better. I look at the election coming up, and I look at this, and I say, you know, like, don't. No matter who wins, we are moving forward. We are ahead of the curve. The rest of the world looks up to us. I don't know if you watched the debate, and it was really good. It was two very fine, educated men, very polite. Got down to the issues. Really followed the format. It was top notch.
Scott, I told you when the debate was coming on, don't turn on History Channel. That was actually Kennedy versus Nixon you were watching.
Oh. Well,
yeah.
They looked old.
Yeah, I don't think they're around anymore. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, call it a long shot, but I think Kennedy's gone.
Long shot, but dum bum. No, I mean, it would be hard for us to not bring up the debate. I know by the time this comes up, people will have a couple of days to digest it. But did you tune in, Mike?
I made it through, I would say, 20, 25 minutes.
All right.
Of it. yeah, I didn't make it to the end. I do recall moments before I turned the channel, sent a text to my father saying, I hate both of these guys. And then I think we put on YouTube videos on the TV.
Right.
Which were much more pleasant than those guys.
I lasted the whole thing. I wanted to watch it. My wife left about 15 minutes in. She says, I can't do this. I mean, I don't know if like watching them two argue is going to make her like have early labor, you know?
That'd be great if the baby's like, I can't stand this, and just pops out.
I mean, hell, if I was the baby and I saw heard that, I'd stay in there for an extra month, you know? I ain't coming out to this.
So, Berlu, the baby's been in there for an extra 4 years now. We're waiting for the results of the election before we're letting it out. Alex is really pushing out there. The baby's like 3 foot tall right now. She is not pleasant.
It's weird. I could talk to the baby, and he answers back inside her stomach.
Yeah.
It's just very muffled, but, you know, I could hear it.
Yeah, I mean, it's in kindergarten. It's hard to get homework up there, but he does it, you know. It is. We're proud of the kid.
I have to shove it up there like, you know how like guys in jail pass notes with the string and the yeah, man, what an embarrassment. What a just total embarrassment. And I don't, you know, I don't, they were saying afterwards, like, they don't even know if they'll have the other ones. Like, I don't even know if we need them, man. Like, the Trump supporters and the Biden people are so set anyway. Like, how many people are changing their vote after watching that?
I can't fathom there's many. I don't know who could be on the fence at this time with everything going on in the world. I mean, in brutal honesty, like, I'm a third party kind of guy. I don't know who's voting third party this year. I mean, who's willing to say, nope, sticking to my morals this year.
It's just so bad. I mean, let's break it down. Trump, let's start with Trump. He probably stole the show more, I guess, than Biden in negative ways, I would say. Of course, if you talk to your conservative friend, it's just amazing. Like, you see people post like, oh, Trump killed it. And then, you know, oh, Biden killed it. It's like, did anybody really kill it? But we'll start with Trump.
The country got killed.
Yeah. Just unbelievably aggressive. Big giant toddler up there, interrupting every 2 seconds, you know, not following any of the rules, can't, just has to steamroll over everything anybody says. Everyone's like, oh, Chris Wallace did such a bad job. I thought he did a good job because I don't know who's going to be able to control that man.
Well, it was a Fox guy. That's like the biggest thing where they're like, well, the moderator was terrible. It's like, that was their one shot of like just taking over the Republicans. Like, right off the bat, it's like, we got home field advantage. Let's kill game one. Maybe we don't even care about game two or game three because we'll say, oh, it's biased because, I mean, I don't even know who the networks are to do the next two. Probably ABC and NBC or CBS, one of them. But it was almost like a slam dunk, and they didn't care. And I mean, I never thought we'd get to the point where we got to say we got to hit the mute button for our presidential elections.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be like a Zoom room. Like, you got to be able to mute them and just let the other person talk or put them in separate rooms or something like that. It's and then, listen, I'm not a Trump guy, but I am certainly not a Biden guy. I guess I would be more like a centrist more than most. I guess I'm, as I get older, I find myself very liberal as far as people's rights and socially, and guess. But I, you know, I got some conservative, like, monetary things. So I guess I'm kind of in the middle. But I'm sick and tired of the Trump fan base and the anything he does wrong. I hate this. Like, well, someone else did it. Or someone else did it. Well, he didn't do that. Well, he was attacking me. Everything. You know, they make fun of like the liberals for playing the victim all the time. The Trump people are turning into the biggest, like, they're the victim. Everyone's against them. The media is against them. The moderate. If Trump wasn't interrupting every 2 seconds, I don't think Wallace would have attacked him at all. Like, as far as pressing him to be quiet, pressing him to answer. Like, he's just a giant baby. And now everyone is taking that personality, too. Like, they can't be wrong. Like, oh, no, that's fake. And now they've gotten so deep in his pocket that if something's wrong, like, they just say, no, it's fake news. That's literally the excuse for everything. Oh, that's not true. Yeah, you, Trump, you actually said this years ago. You did this. Nah, I didn't say that. It's amazing.
Well, the latest one was, I think, like, at a rally, and before he was going to a rally, he said they found mail-in ballots in the river that had his name on it.
Right.
And everybody's like, okay, name us the river. Oh, well, we're getting you the information. It's like, no. This is not a hard answer thing where it's like, we have to, like, get scientists involved in it. You found it in a river. That river has a name. It's in a state of one of the United States. It's in a section of the United States. Like, if you go so broad, just say we found it in eastern Pennsylvania and then leave it at that.
Yeah.
Every oddball thing, you're just like, okay, can we get some information? Can we get a picture of the damn ballots? And that'd be the easiest thing to fake. Like, you could literally get, like, a support, like, throw your thing in the river.
Yep.
We'll take a picture and we'll go, aha, they dumped the Trump votes down here.
Yeah. It's just that the new, like, yeah, I did something. You said this, Mr. Trump. Nah, I didn't say that. And they go, nah, he didn't say that. Like, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. It's like, and then the second thing, obviously, we have the whole not being able to turn down white supremacy on live TV. Very strange move. Should be a softball pitch to Trump. He should go, I don't agree with anything that any group that preaches hate or prejudice or anything. Softball. Lob it up. Boom. Hit it out of the park. Nope. He has some weird answer. There's people that say he got sidetracked on his answer and he wasn't really saying that to the Proud Boy. I don't know. Biden did the same thing with Antifa. Oh, Antifa's not a group. It's an I. Like, he should have said, I denounce any group that promotes hate or violence, blah, 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 blah. Boom. It's done with. It's done with, yeah. You know?
It seems like both of them, it's like, can you tell us your views on arsonists? Well, some fires are good, you know, like, it's cold in parts of Alaska, and you need a big fire. So right. I don't want to throw shade on everybody. It's
like, even the one African-American senator, and he, a Republican senator, he was,
yeah,
like,
I know he's talking about, yeah, South Carolina, I think it is.
Yeah, where he was just like, you know, Donald Trump needs to correct his statement and denounce white supremacism, or he didn't mean it. Like, he meant what he said. So it's true. It's like, that should be the easiest of questions in the debate. Hey, Mike, do you denounce a racist organization that hates a giant part of the country because of their color?
Be safe. Stand up.
Yeah. Stand down or whatever you say. You know, it's
now they got T-shirts. They're selling T-shirts with it. And it's like, nobody sits back and go, maybe we don't want to be associated with that.
Yeah. And then the third thing that drives me crazy about Trump is him building his exit strategy already for if he loses, like with the ballot stuff. Just padding that in. Boom, boom. Oh, it'll be corrupt. It'll take months. The guy's not going to leave. There, you know, and when he loses, he can just say to his insane bootlicking followers, like, oh, it was rigged. It was rigged. We didn't actually lose. And they're going to believe it. They're going to preach that to you in the office. They're going to preach that to you when you have a dinner. And it's going to cause problems. And I'm very scared for what's going to happen violence-wise after this election. It's actually scary. Bringing a child into this world in the next couple weeks, it scares me a little bit, like, how people are going to react to this thing, because no one knows how to lose. And also, I am sick and tired of everyone pretending they know these two guys. Like I know you, Mike. Like, have you spent a minute with this man? Have you ever met this man? How do you just go... You're saying the news media is the worst thing ever. It's horrible. All you know about Donald Trump is what the news has told you. That's all you know of him.
But it's fake, so. You know.
But it's fake.
So whatever they say, think the opposite. and that's him.
But believe it, if it's pro, if it's a pro story, it's totally real. It's totally real.
Yeah, yeah. I have we ever thought of the White House to have squatters' rights? Like, this is literally like the third roommate that you bring in who hasn't given you rent in like 3 months, and you're like, seriously, Johnny, you got to get out of the house. No, man, it's corrupted, the system. You know, I provided many, many things for this apartment, and that's not accounted for in my rent. I'm sorry. No. It's like, are we going to really need the army to come in and grab him and take him out if he loses?
Yeah. And then, I'm sorry, I got to harp on conservatives a little bit. And then the next day with the whole, oh, Biden was wearing a wire. Okay. So if you think he's wearing a wire, and you know this man's cognitive ability is depreciating quickly, right? We could all kind of agree on that. He's not all there. He's kind of an old man, and he's kind of out of it. He's kind of like the Democrats, kind of a puppet boy a little bit, you know? You think that he's going to be able to, okay, hide the wire at all costs while 8 bazillion people watch this live on TV, be able to get messages in his hidden earpiece and repeat those words perfectly to sound flawless, like he's answering a question in live time, in real time, he's able to do that. No, I can't do that. And I consider myself half able-minded.
Yeah, if he's senile, like, you know, like midway through his sentence, he'd be screaming, I have voices! Who are you? What are you doing in my head?
Or you think he's able to adjust in his suit enough to, like, people said his mic was, like, in his arm, like, and he's getting, come on, man. Come on. Like, how old are we? Like, how stupid are we? Like, did Biden just kind of play in the middle? We'll get to Biden in just a second. But did he... Is he that good of a politician or puppet boy to be able to answer lifetime questions with someone in your ear? That's harder than just BSing answers, if you ask me. Like, if I was in your ear, Mike, right now, like, okay, I want you to say this. Go, go, go. And you say it perfectly, and then the next, okay, here's how I want you to answer the next question in lifetime while Trump's talking. Respond to that. Go, go, go. Like, there's no way.
It'd be great if they were, like, on the... Like, the room's Wi-Fi, and it's going in and out, and, like, Biden's just, like, holding it, like, 15 seconds before he says his next word every time.
Hold on. Yeah, this is how I would believe you if you said Biden was wearing wire. If he was like this, with 2 fingers on his one ear, and he's, like, pausing and being like, hold on, holding one finger up. Wait a minute. Okay, now I can answer. Like, God, come on, guys. Be better than that. Be a little better than that. So let's move to Biden, okay?
Okay.
Biden, I didn't think he was terrible. I didn't think he was great. I think he did exactly what he has to do if he's actually ahead in the polls. I don't know what to believe, okay? Because Hillary was ahead in every poll, apparently. But if he is in this lead, per se, and he just lets Trump embarrass himself and interrupt and be and just kind of stays calm, answers the questions, doesn't go crazy. I thought if that was their game plan, he did fine at that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I thought he did decent. I think it was smart of him to, like, eat, you know, kind of raise up to Trump, tell him to shut up. He had a worse friend. Like, small stuff, he didn't shout or anything like that. So that kind of worked for him. I think, as we see, him being older, he bumbled some words. He had to go back with some statements, which always that worrisome thing. And I understand, like, they said his whole life he's had, like, a stuttering problem. Right. And these are signs of a stutterer, not necessarily
a guy going through dementia
and everything like that. I can sit back and see that. But, of course, when you're talking about the job of pretty much the leader of the world, that's always like, kind of hold back kind of deals or whatever. I mean, for the stuff he said, nothing blew me out of the field. Like, wow, that's the change we need. That's the stuff I've been hearing about the Democrats for the longest time and all. This is left-wing politicalness and all. This is a crazy transition I've been waiting for.
Right.
It was just like an
middle of the road.
Average. Yep. He's like your fourth starting pitcher. You ain't exactly sitting back expecting much. So he goes like half the game, does all right. You go, thank you. We'll bring you back next week.
Let's face it. We've been doing this podcast for 6 years. There are nights where I sit here and I try to say something and I can't get the word. Like, I can't remember the words. And I'm 40-something years younger than Joe Biden. Like, there are nights where I try to explain something. Berlo, I know you do this. And we try to get the words out and it just doesn't come out. And, like, I sympathize with that. Like, I don't find, like, a stutter or a stumble in words as something terrible. Mm-hmm. I think it's actually way more common, and in some ways it's more real. You know, if like you're super polished, it almost sounds like rehearsed. So sometimes I don't think that's necessarily a terrible thing.
I mean, it was nothing where I'm like, what? And then he would go back, but it's still enough where somebody who's holding on to something will go, you see.
Right.
That's more what, it's nothing that's going to deter what I'm going to do in this coming election. It's more in the line of all the naysayers who are trying to get those limited, I don't know what I'm going to do, to go, look, he started this, and then he went back, and then when he did this and did that, yeah. He's not right in the mind.
So. Yeah. And he had his weak points. Like, I thought him not, he could have, like, denounced Antifa right then, say that the violence is ridiculous. I thought he could have, that whole green energy plan thing. He was like, it's not mine. My plan is the Joe Biden plan. He's like, well, what is that? He's like, yeah, it's the Joe Biden. Like, okay.
It's like a lime green plan. not like a dark green plan, like these crazy AOCs out there.
Yeah. And I thought, I guess it would be hard for anyone, but I thought he still had his moments where he let Trump get under his skin, man. And shut up, man. You're an animal. Like, he didn't have to do it. He knew what he was up against. That guy's going to do his thing. You almost could let Trump just talk his way into in his little wormhole, you know?
I think you need to do it a little bit. Though I wasn't a supporter of Hillary's, I do kind of understand she had to keep her cool because everybody wanted to say, oh, look at the, for lack of a better term, ladies, look at the bitch complaining.
Right.
You know, so it's like, oh, this bossy lady is pushing around. She can't handle a little man saying something. What's she going to do with world leaders? Unfortunately, it's a double standard with women and men. When Joe did it, it's like, yeah, and if she did it, it's like, what are you complaining about?
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I mean, in the end, I don't know. It was kind of a useless night. The only funny thing I saw the entire night was everything on Facebook. I'll give props to AOC, who says they complain about me getting $250 as a treat for my birthday for highlights, and Trump is spending $70,000 a year on his hair. It's just the whole concept.
It's bad, man. It's
the most important decision of our lives, and yet this is the most boring thing, and I can't stand it's going to happen again next week.
Yeah, see, I don't even think it's the most important decision for us, because we are, if you accept that one of these people is going to be this big change in this world, I don't think it's going to happen. It's important as far as, like, yeah, the next 4 years, but I don't see this getting any better. I don't. The way social media is and the way people are programmed now, and they hate each other. It's like a Mets Yankees. It's like a Mets Braves rivalry. You pick a team now. You don't even listen to the other side anymore. It's just like, it's bad, man. It's bad. I think people need to really start floating in the middle and start like putting pressure on both sides to start working together and knock off the victim blaming and the Democrats do everything wrong. Like, you're under the same country, guys. Like, come on, man. This is like Civil War type crap.
Well, I've said it before. I'll say it again. Like, I consider myself independent. I think pretty much every election I've voted for some other party other than Republican or Democrat. Maybe voted for Obama his first time. But I've gone independent ever since. These debates got to have 3, 4, five representatives of different views and all, because all the Republicans and Democrats are doing is they're just finding their top name or top gotcha kind of person to send up there. If somebody went up there and was like calm and like, all right, we got to do a little bit of what he's saying. We got to do a little bit of what you're saying. We can't be doing everything you're both saying. Maybe somebody sit back and go, oh my God, we have more than two choices.
Yeah. I mean, it's brutal. It's not going to change. And it's just, I don't know. I get nervous for people not being able to lose.
What would be more, would it be more insane or more entertaining if Kanye was the third one up there?
Oh, Kanye would probably win that debate. people would come out like, oh, Biden was too wishy-washy. Trump was a monster. Kanye, though, he was pretty chill. You know, he handled those questions well.
He's just the same guy seeing me and the Kardashians every week, man. Same guy.
Yeah. So
I trust him with the nukes.
I'm sorry if you're just tuning in. We're like talking a lot of politics, but it's really hard not to this week. But we don't normally do that. We'll get to the fun stuff in a little bit.
The moral of the story is don't vote.
Yeah. Don't vote. Yep. George Carlin said. Yep.
Yeah. These people are pressuring you. Nah. What? The country will figure it out. It's cool.
I don't know, man. It makes me start to think about like protecting my house, you know, protecting my family in some ways, because I don't know what people are going to do, man. I don't know what people are going
to do. You better buy your guns now, because Joe Biden's going to take them from you. Oh, that's what I heard.
He's going to take our guns. He hates us. We're all going to be... I don't know, man. I can't even
You know that's like Christmas for the NRA. When there's a Republican that has to give over to a Democrat, you know those months leading into it is just like, oh, we got a sale on these autos.
You know, they see these riots and they see COVID and they see unrest. They're like, yes, come to our store to buy guns. let's shift gears here, though. That's enough politics for 1 week on Verbal Shenanigans here. Let's get to our guest here. So, a couple weeks ago, I got in touch with the guys at Spine Farm Records. And there's a band named Saul, I believe out of Iowa, which is probably... I wonder how many actual big bands have come out of Iowa before.
The Missouri Miracle Trio?
Right. Why are they called the Missouri Trio?
Well, I mean, it was just they were all three of them were on different parts of Missouri, and like nobody in Missouri talks to each other. So
they're from Iowa, though.
Yeah. the band met in Missouri. They did their college in Missouri.
Oh, gotcha.
They were in three different parts of Iowa. Then luck be have it, they went to Missouri. In three different parts of Missouri, but they met up at like a kegger, I think.
Now, did you just black out and hear Missouri instead of me saying I'm from Iowa, or what happened?
I had to guess, probably. Probably, I had a joke in my head, and then I just went with it, and I'm like, oh yeah, that didn't make sense in that scenario. Well, guys, we'll go deeper into it.
Well, it can't be wrong. You got to lean right into it. See? That's the way now. You're never wrong. It's just fake, and you just cover it up with a bunch of nonsense. That's how you do. But anyway, they're from Iowa. Kind of like a heavy rock band. Got a little metal influence. They recently worked with the Disturbed and a bunch of other bands. They got a really cool new video out, a new single. So we're going to get Blake Saul, lead singer of the band Saul, nonetheless, on the show. So let's give him a call. Blake, welcome to the show. I'm Scott. That's Mike there. Thanks for giving us a few minutes here.
Yeah, anytime, dudes.
So exciting times for the band. I know you guys got a new album coming out. You just had a new video drop, and actually I think it was Octane on Sirius. I know I heard one of your songs come on recently. So it's funny. I've noticed your name popping up a lot lately. So. And we'll get to all of that. So you guys should be pretty pumped up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's been a lot going on. And, yeah, the new single on Octane, King of Misery, a lot of radio stations spinning that right now.
Yeah, so, like, where you guys are out of Iowa, correct?
Yep, Northwest Iowa. Yeah, we're kind of connected to Nebraska and South Dakota.
Okay. So when you guys you play with your brother and a couple other guys. When you guys formed the band, were you like, was it you and your brother just in the garage playing tunes, or was this like, well, after you guys moved down and found each other? How did you, what was the origin story of Saul?
Well, yeah, Zach and I, we're close. We're only a year apart. So one day Zach said, he wanted to buy a guitar, and we were young. I mean, he was probably 13. And it pretty much boiled down to, they had a really bad bass player at the time. And he's like, hey, would you go out and buy a bass and learn how to play bass and come play bass in my band? And I went out and bought a Fender, four-string Fender P bass, and bought a little PV amp. And then rock and roll music corrupted my mind. And so that's where I went from there. And we were like, it was probably like 15, 16 years old. And yeah, we just took it off from there. And you know, I never had intentions of really singing in the band, but we kind of got stuck that way. You know, being in small town Iowa, there wasn't a lot of people, a lot of choices. So we had some people come audition, and I talked to Zach, and I'm like, man, I think I can do it better than this guy.
Yeah.
And and it just kind of took off that way, and we were just the Saul brothers. We'd go out and play acoustic, and eventually we got a drummer, and we played as a three-piece for quite a while. And yeah, and then we got Will on bass and Miles on drums, and now it's
yeah. It is. I as a bass player, I feel like your origin story of bass playing is what I've heard for yeah. We need a bass player. Go grab one and play it. You know, figure it out. That's how every garage band starts.
Yeah. I gotta be honest. I gotta question the Iowa rock scene where every story is, I don't know how to do this. Don't worry, you're better than the person who apparently does. Right off the bat.
Yeah. I guess kind of. it was a tough time, you know, because we wanted to be in a rock band at that time, but we're just small. I'm from a town of 500 people.
Oh wow.
And we still live around here, and it was just way it had to go.
I mean, out of curiosity, what is a scene in that kind of like Rust Belt area? Are there like a lot of like rock genre, or did you guys just kind of get your niche into rock and wanted to get into it?
Well, around here is pretty country heavy. A lot of people listening to country music, which is fine. I mean, it's not good, but it's fine. We grew up on, you know, System of a Down and Disturbed and, you know, stuff like that. That's where our heads automatically went. We were in a cover band with our buddies for a long time, and we were called Unbreakable. The name didn't fit. We broke up. So we did that for a while, and we were covering, you know, Disturbed and, you know, Slipknot's Duality and stuff like that. And it started to turn some heads when we were doing it, because there is some rock and metal dudes around here and chicks too, you know. But, primarily it's pretty country, rural area. Mm.
Well, let's talk about that. You touched on something I wanted to get to later on, but, you know, you grew up influenced by the Disturbed, and I know recently your song King of Misery, you were able to co-write with them, correct?
Yes. Yep. We co-wrote with David Draiman.
Right.
Lead vocals.
So what is that like growing up as a fan, and then all of a sudden, you know, you got this song that, you know, could be a massive hit, and then you're working with some of the guys you grew up listening to?
It was wild. It was wild for somebody like that. And we had to do it over Zoom, you know, just like this. And for him to come on, you know, I probably fangirled for like an hour when we first started, you know, and he had to tell me like, all right, let's get to work. And, and I'm all giddy, like, oh man, David Draiman, you know. And for him to say that he was a fan of us, he was a fan of the song Brother and Trial by Fire and everything. I mean, it was definite. It was some solid facts that you're doing it right. You know what I mean? We felt really good. Like somebody this iconic and this big is a fan of us. So we, you know, we felt really good in doing it. And he was a pleasure to work with. Really awesome dude.
Is there a lot of changes doing it from Zoom? Did you get a different vibe than, say, going into the studio and hashing it out? Or was it pretty straightforward?
You know, pretty much over Zoom, a lot of it was pretty much Zach would have an acoustic guitar. We came in kind of swinging. We had some ideas for the song right off the bat. But Draymond, actually, he put some really – he had me do a lot of things vocally that I guess I don't typically do, which was really great for me. He took away the idea of where, like, I get in the mindset of heavier is growlier, it's louder, it's screamy, you know what I mean? I get in that mindset, and he's like, let's get your head out of that space. He's like, let the lyric content and the melody carry all the weight. And that's what we did with the song, and it really worked out. He had a lot of great things to bring to the table as far as the melody and it was just a lot of great stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. A lot of like the king of misery. When I raised on that part, I wouldn't have done that. I would have screamed, you know what I mean? And he brought that to the table. He's like, pop that shit up, you know, get up one. And I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah. I mean, and it came out great. And you guys also had you have a new music video out that was a pretty sweet production. I guess I'm a little biased too, because I know my brother was kind of involved in some of the organizing of that. My brother, Tim.
Yeah. When you bring that up, you look like just like Tim.
Really? I don't get that a lot. Yeah. I get like, I'm a lot taller and way more handsome than him, but I'll take it. I'll take it.
I'll give you that.
But no, like usually, you know, he sends me, I'll be honest, he sends me 8,000 things over the air, like, check this out. And I'm like, yeah, you know, cool. But the video I thought came out really cool, and it's a really interesting kind of concept, and the production is really neat. Can you talk about that a little? Like, what was the idea behind that, and how did that come all together?
Okay, so lyric content, so it's... like, don't mind me while I circle this drain, run around until we wash away. That whole concept of just kind of the spiral down. So Scott Hansen Films, Digital Thunderdome, approached us, and he had this idea for the music video. And he brought up, he's like, I want to shoot it in the Badlands. One, because super awesome location. And two, we are the first band ever to shoot a music video at the Badlands. Which I thought was really a super cool point. And he brought this concept to us about this, you know, stranded astronaut. And it's almost got like this, you guys know the movie, like Groundhog's Day.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like kind of every day is just repeating and repeating.
Right.
So that was kind of the concept of the video. And that's why you see all the bodies at the end of it. Cause she just keeps repeating the same life. And when she touches the helmet and it just kind of spirals in,
yes.
She's just going back to repeat the same life. So that's really about the video and the struggle of it, just always repeating the same mistakes.
Yeah. Now is it like when it comes down to like videos, like is it hard to like come up with something like, okay, let's do something real unique where it's not just us playing and, you know, looking angry in a scene, like to almost combine that with a story and a director, like is that hard for the band to work with, or do you kind of let like the director and writer take over that and then present the ideas to you? I'm very interested in that.
You know, yeah, it's definitely something that Scott really took over and kind of had the full reins. And, you know, we'd stand there and be like, well, what do you want us to do, Scott? I mean, how do you want us to approach this? And, you know, his words were, you just do you, baby. And so I was like, okay, that's what we'll do.
Right.
But as far as the concept and everything, and the shooting of that, he literally had that done before we even showed up. Him and Catherine, the girl in the suit, him and his crew pretty much had that all done, and they had the concept and they just ran with it. So we just had to come in and do our scenes, and it was really cool. And like that whole last flare scene where I'm singing part of the chorus and everything, it was a lot harder than it looks because it's hard to breathe in flare smoke.
yeah. Shocking.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't do it. Just don't do it.
Hear that, kids?
Don't breathe in flare smoke. But yeah, so it was very cool. And like, we just let him have full control. I mean, he was the man with the camera, so he kind of really knew what he was doing.
It came out great. You guys should be proud of it. It's really neat.
Thank you.
Now, last year you released a song, Brother, and you dedicated it to your late brother, Caleb. I was listening to some interviews. I found it kind of interesting how you talked about, like, in your family, you don't really talk about the bad times. You just kind of, you know, keep things cheerful and whatever. But I'm kind of curious, when you want to dive into something you, I don't know how to say, like, you really didn't, like, philosophically, like, really deep dive or talk out before, is it easy kind of making it, kind of releasing that energy into a song, or were you finding periods where you're like, ooh, this is getting really hard to get through and emotional?
You know, definitely at first it was emotional. When it came to the song Brother, it kind of wrote itself. Because Caleb passed away in 2009, so it took us a long time to dive in and write a song for him. But when Zach and I looked at each other, we're just like, hey, let's do one for Caleb. Let's, you know, let's bring it up and let's talk about it. And from there, the song pretty much just took on its own life and wrote itself. And so that was the easy part. But playing it live, definitely like the first month or two was definitely emotional, especially when people started singing and like doing that middle – that bridge with us where they're all screaming Brother, you know, right along with me. And it's almost a dead lull of music. Zach's playing like a couple chords and they're just, I can hear the crowd louder than I can hear myself. And that was definitely emotional. It still really, really is. The really tough times, I think, when it comes to that song, playing it live, is Zach and I had a guy that we worked with for 3 years around here, and he had recently passed away. So we did a live stream with Clutch, and I didn't know it was going to hit me that hard, but we dedicated Brother to him. I almost couldn't come into the first part of the song. I was choked up. Just the whole, you know, the meaning and the vibe behind the song. As soon as the guitar hit, I was getting choked up because, you know, it's got its own life and it's got its own feel. It's heavy.
Yeah. You know, segueing into, you know, you have the, you know, the unique thing of being able to play music with your brother. What is that like, as far as, like, you know, now you guys are, you're seeing success and you're working with, you know, top-notch guys, and you're being played, and you got a new album coming out. What is the dynamic of playing with your brother? Like, is it, you know, like, if I was to ever play music with my brother, I feel like I'd be making fun of him the whole time. Like, I feel, you know, like, or, you know, I'd look at his face while I was singing, like, you know, what? I would just laugh at him. Like, do you guys have like a, like, is it when it's time for music, it's like a work relationship, and then afterwards it's, you know, back to brother? Or like, what's the dynamic with playing with your brother all this time now?
We definitely joke around a lot.
Yeah.
That's just part of our personalities. So we definitely do that a lot. But when it comes to, like, Saul and the work, I mean, Zach and I definitely hunker down and get it done together. I mean, it's definitely a group effort.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But as far as, like, our dynamics sometimes, if you ask Chris Dawson, our engineer producer, it's pretty scary because he is a single child.
Right.
And he doesn't know. I mean, we can argue sometimes, Zach and I, until he realizes I'm always right.
Right.
And
right.
So, like, just being in the studio, just arguing about a part, and Dawson, you know, we'd take a little break, take a fiver, and come back down, you know, into the studio. And he's like, whoa. He's like, I thought the band just broke up. He's yeah, like, yeah. We're arguing, full grown men arguing like that. And we're like, oh, no, man. We were just laughing upstairs. We settled it. It was done. You know, we right. argued for that 3 minutes and it's over. It's good. I've never played music with anybody else besides okay. Zach. So I guess I can't say if it's different, or I just don't know any different.
Yeah.
I guess I wouldn't want to play music with anybody else.
Yeah, that's great, man. You're very privileged to do that, you know. It's nice.
As the band's been going along, you perform with, like, Bush and Fuel, and you talked about working with Dave. I'm just kind of curious and all. Have you noticed, like, other bands kind of fanboying on you guys now that your success has been growing?
Yes. I don't know about fanboying or anything, but definitely a lot more interaction. You know, talking to the guys from Fire from the Gods quite a bit more. Zach's been interacting with the guys from Nothing More. It's just a lot more of that, and it's a mutual respect because we're big fans of those bands, and for them to come back and start reciprocating it, and you know, like Chris Motionless and White, like we were the very first band he played on, like Octane as like his favorite song of 2019.
That's awesome.
So that's really great to see, and he's not from far north of us. I mean, we're 4 hours from Minneapolis. It's not like it's terrible far. So it's cool to see that interaction and that community just starting to build a little bit more on people that we are. Respect as our peers and our equals, so it's really awesome, actually.
Well, let's segue into you got an album coming out on the 23rd, which is soon, about a month away, over a month. And now it's got to be interesting as far as a lot of these venues across the country being shut down during all this time. You guys maybe not being able to tour, but did that provide you guys an opportunity to just focus completely on writing this album? Tell us about the new album a little bit and kind of how you guys, what fans should expect from this.
Well, one positive thing that did come out of the quarantine and the whole COVID thing is I think the original projection of the album release was going to be August 21st, which... You know, Tim, your brother, and everybody at Spine Farm, you know, gathered up and they're like, you know what? We got a little downtime. Let's go write a couple more songs.
Okay.
So in that time, we did. We went into the studio and we did four more songs. One of them being King of Misery. One of the other ones being Rise as Equals, which is the title track to the record.
Yep.
And I will never say this again, but Tim was completely right in that scenario. Ugh.
That does happen, you're saying? It's interesting. Right. I'm waiting for that once.
A broken clock is right two times. Yeah.
No, but he was completely right. And, you know, honestly, those last songs are my favorite on the record. So it really worked out in our favor that we had that little downtime and pushed the record back to wait till, you know, hopefully COVID's done or getting close to wrapping up. And, so it was definitely worth it.
So now when the album comes out, like, do you guys have any tour dates planned or anything like that? Or is it still kind of up in the air on how to support this album?
You know, there's no tour dates. Right. I mean, we're talking about tour dates at the top of the year in 21, but who knows right now? It can go one way or the other. I mean, we're ready to hunker down and get back out on the road.
Yep.
But we're very unsure right now. There's a lot of names and tours being proposed to us, but we don't know if it's going to happen. And that's kind of depressing. We're talking about, you know, more live streams, stuff like that. But I'm tired of live streaming. It just comes down to you get done with the song and you're waiting for the roar of the crowd. And it's my wife going like that.
Yeah.
At least she's digging it, you know, but yeah.
Yeah. During these last 6 months, we talked to so many bands and artists and, actors, and it's just really interesting to see how people, you know, all artistic people are dealing with this. Some are finding new hobbies, some are just diving into more content, but it seems to be in this last month and a half that people, me and Mike, talked are just chomping at the bit to get out there, and whether it is act, perform, you know, they're tired of writing in the room alone. It's time for people to hear some of this stuff. So
yes. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm fine with some downtime now and then, but this is some downtime.
Yes.
And it's
like when you're on tour, out of curiosity, do you get more along with your brother or the other members of the band, out of curiosity?
Zach and I mean, even earlier today we argued and he stormed out like a little but that's fine. No, we get along very well. I guess, I mean, Willie, our bass player, he's one of a kind. I lived with him. We rented a house together for 3 years. And he's pretty much like a brother. So I'd say we're all pretty much family. Miles being the new guy, I mean, he's been around for a couple months now after Joe had to step down and have his babies and all that. And I know, right?
I got one on the way in a month. Who does that, you know?
Yeah, Zach does too.
Nice.
So it's fine. we got plenty of time to get to know Miles a little bit better. But right off the bat, huge asset to the band and just generally nice and good dude to be around too. So
now let's talk about your fans. As far now, I know you guys have a thing that you call your fans equals. Tell us about that whole philosophy and what goes behind that and your relationship with your fans.
Okay, well, we tried to, you know how like a lot of bands will be like, they'll be so-and-so nation or army or family or,
yeah,
you know, something along those lines. Well, we were trying to spin it into such a way that, I mean, the fans are a huge part of this business. I mean, you're selling something nobody needs but everybody wants. I mean, it's not tangible. You can't hold it. But the power that the people have on your success and where you're going is huge. I mean, it's really like the biggest part of the band. I mean, you can be the best band in the world, but if you are only playing to your sister, Sarah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just stay in the garage, you know what I mean? Which is fine, you know? But so we had to give the fans a name to where to show them that they were just as powerful and meaningful and needed as we were to the music. So we had to call them our equals, and the whole slogan is Rises Equals, and that's kind of where the album came from and the title track. And yeah, that's where that came from. We had to show the fans that they are powerful.
It's awesome.
I gotta ask you, I know the name of the band is based off of your last name, but how many horrible Breaking Bad jokes have you guys heard?
At least twice a week. Yeah, Better Call Saul. I get that all the time.
Every time you're like, oh, you're original. That was the first time. We've had this name for months, but you guys figured it out.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I say that every time. I'm like, oh, I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, that's a good one. You know?
Yeah.
So
I don't get too mad about it, though.
The album is called Rides as Equals, comes out October 23rd. I assume that's on all streaming platforms, also to buy, I'm sure, and whatnot. It's been really fun talking to you, man. I really think the new song sounds great. The video that goes with it's great. It just has a sound that I could see just exploding, and I really wish you guys the best of luck. If people want to check the band out, or they want to interact with you, or you know, they hear this interview and they want to get more information, where's the best place to go interact with you guys?
I think if you, depending on whatever social media you use, we try to reply all the time. So hit us up. I mean, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We got TikTok now, Twitch. Everything. We literally have it all. But the fastest way to find all those links is saulofficial.com. It has all the links to all of our social medias, email, whatever you need, saulofficial.com.
Awesome. Now, Blake, I don't know you very well, but I assume your TikTok is not like you doing all the dances and things like that and showing your butt and stuff.
Not yet.
The next music.
Longer we're going to be in COVID, yeah. So it might happen.
If the tour gets canceled again, just go to Saul Official's TikTok, and boy, you're going to see some stuff.
Yeah. I don't know how we're going to play with that whole TikTok thing. I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. My daughter's trying to teach me dance moves and everything. I don't know what's going to happen.
If you thought the astronaut video was cool, wait till you see.
Yeah, it's going to get real weird.
Blake, thank you so much for your time, man. We wish you the best of luck with the album, and it's been a great time chatting with you, man.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
All right, Blake Saul, Mike. Blake Saul. I think they got a good chance of being big, man.
They got a good sound, man. I listened to a couple of songs leading into the interview. It's all good stuff, man, to give them credit.
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, and you got to go check out that music video. It's really neat, but Blake Saul, everybody. So as we're doing this podcast, Mike, I just got a text message from an unknown number. Hello, Ariana. This is Amelia, and that's my new number. Are we going camping this summer? By the way, I broke up with Matt. I'm done with cheaters. What do I do in this situation? I think we should... and then see where this goes.
My first thought, like right off the bat, is we're in the fall, right. So talk about camping in the summer. You,
You're planning 9 months ahead?
Okay, so let's play this. Okay, so we're going camping in the summer. So should I respond, camping in the summer? Why not fall?
Yeah.
Okay. Camping in the summer? Summer ! Why not in the fall? Okay. So we'll see what she responds with, if she responds, or she realizes that it's not, I'm not Ariana. So I will keep you abreast. We need like a news sound every time she responds. Like, dun, 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 dun. Like oh.
Monday Night Football theme?
That's all I got. That's all. See, remember how we were talking about Joe Biden? See, I would die on that stage. How are we going to blame a 78-year-old man for not being able to get words on? Monday Night Football theme was the only thing that came to my head.
Vote Berlew next election for lead for verbal shenanigans.
Berlew, your hair is getting long.
I haven't touched it since March.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't have any kind of like shavers or anything. I have no skills in that. So I just like, nobody's sending back. Wife kind of likes it a little longer. So
yeah, maybe you should. Maybe you could hook up with like Blake Soul and be like the triangle player in the back. Like get some metal hair going.
Yeah, I mean, I've been screaming for years. My triangle play is top notch, like easily top five, top three. Depends on, you know, what kind of.
Listen, be a little music. Humble. Be a little humble. It's not top three.
I'm leaning towards fourth and all, but I really got to work on that left side of the triangle.
It's
you know?
A toss up.
You know, I kill it on the right and the bottom. It's the left. I got to bring up my beats on it.
Yeah, your ting sound on the left isn't pure. It's not great. It's a little forced. And,
I mean, that night I did that hour-long solo on the triangle, I thought was pretty wicked. I mean, I know Prince was pretty pissed off because that's who asked me to jump on stage and do it. But
So Prince.
Yeah, this is a while ago. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, not all these things happened just yesterday. It was quite a few years back, you know, when his new album kicked off and he's like, we need something that screams Prince fans. And somebody said triangle, and he's like, I know a guy.
It was purple, right? Your triangle was purple?
Nah, it's cliche, man. Oh. It's cliche. Lavender. I don't want to step on his style.
All right.
I make my own style. Now, it wasn't too far off it being lavender, but it was in the right realm where it's like, Prince, you got your purple? Mikey B's got the lavender.
The other day I was having a conversation with a friend who is newly single. So he was he was dating a girl for, I don't know, 2 years.
Is it the girl from the text?
No, she hasn't responded yet. I will let the listeners know if she does respond, though. He's like newly single. He's like our age, you know, so he's a little older. And like they were dating for 2 years, which is, you know, as you get older, 2 years becomes closer to that, like, you know, crap or get off the pot kind of stage, you know, like, because people are getting older, they want to get married, and they don't want to do the 5 to 10 year dating like you do when you're in the 16, you know. And we started this conversation talking about him being like newly, like, back onto the single market, you know what I mean? Like hitting the market and like what his approach would be. Like, would he do the online thing? Would he do the bar thing? Like, and how we do it. Now, I'm assuming with like the COVID stuff, the bar, hitting on people at a bar has got to be real tough at this point.
Oh yeah. I can't imagine. You're like yelling from like halfway across the room and all, trying to pick up, trying to say some sweet things, try to say your perfume smells great. She's like, how would you, you're too close. Get away.
Berlew, your answer to that is perfect, because that's going to lead me right into this conversation. The fact that you're like, yeah, you're screaming across the bar, saying her perfume smells great. I assume you're very much like me when you were on the old single market. Not much of a big player, if you will.
No, I never had game. I didn't have a lot of like dates and stuff like that growing up. It's just, I was naturally the guy who was nice to the girl, and then eventually always ended in the friend zone where you're like, son of a.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what we were talking about. We're like, do you remember, like, and I guess even with phones a little bit, but like just being like that approach, like luring somebody to, or even starting to like open up that. That's like the hardest part for me, like always was for me, like establishing the relationship. Now I'm in a relationship. I'm fantastic. I'm like, you know, I'm all in. I'm very attentive. But like being able to start the relationship was always like a nightmare for me. And it made me start to think about like different generations of trying to like get girls to pay attention to me. So I'm going to take you back to eighth grade.
Okay.
So this girl, Nicole, liked me, right? She was 1 year older than me. I guess this was seventh grade because she was in eighth grade. Now, at the time, yeah, you know, getting those older chicks. At the time, I had one kiss in my life. My first kiss was in the summer of seventh grade. So this was summer of sixth grade. And I told the story. I kissed on rollerblades. It was like forced by my friends. It was like the worst experience ever. Like your friends are like, kiss her. And you're like on rollerblades and people are around you while it happens. Like I'm getting hot right now talking about it. Like it gives me like the chills because it was so embarrassing.
Like, were they on rollerblades and like behind you and pushing your two faces together?
like ramming us together? No.
Like roller derby and I'll kiss her.
So at the time, like rollerblading was really big. I rollerbladed everywhere. I played hockey all the time in the street and rollerbladed. And she was not on rollerblades, but we were like together. And what that means back then, together, basically means like you talk on the phone at night to each other and you had like your separate line in the house. And our separate line was also the internet line, the AOL one. So if someone picked up the phone, you get disconnected. You're like, you know, like, and you lose it. And I was forced to kiss this girl. Her friends and my friends were like, go ahead. And I don't know why other people are obsessed with someone else kissing the other person, but it was interesting. I was always the guy. I was afraid of all that stuff. Like very like, I don't know. Like I remember going to this party in seventh grade. It was a birthday party and this girl had an indoor in-ground pool and all the kids were like in her bedroom playing that, it wasn't Spin the Bottle. It was like 7 Minutes in Heaven or something like that. Like you go
in. When you're in the closet.
I was petrified. All I hoped was that I was in the room, but I was the kid like, no, I don't want to play. So I remember sitting on the girl's bed watching the other like 8 to 10 people play it. I was basically like a creep.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah. I mean, you're the dude in like in those movies, he's like in the dark corner with a cigarette just watching the couple make out. You know,
I was a cuck. Like, I was a cuck.
You're like, yes. Can't continue.
I remember being so like scared. And I think this is some kind of like Irish Catholic guilt thing, man. Like, because I just remember always thinking about like, what if my mom finds out, you know, like never had the balls, like always, I was always a step behind, you know what I mean?
So like you come home and you do 7 minutes and she's like, hi Scott, how was your night? Wait a minute. Is that closet lint in your hair?
or if I answered her like the night was good, especially those 7 minutes. You know? And she's like, what happened? What happened to her? No.
Doesn't even answer. She just leans back and whacks you across the face.
I'm telling you, some kind of Catholic guilt thing, man. I'm telling you. But anyway, I remember like sitting on the bed. So I didn't participate, but I hung out in the room. Then they were like playing like Spin the Bottle. This was like, there was always a family around that like didn't care and let these things happen. And then I remember me and one other kid swimming in the pool while every other kid was inside playing Spin the Bottle. We're just like outside swimming in the pool.
Were you guys like having a conversation? Were you like, what do you think they're doing in there? Or What are you talking, sports?
If I could tell you, I would tell you, but all I know is the kid's name was Paul, and we were like just swimming around, like throwing a ball around, like, you know, like, you know, like, just
this
like
is the greatest party ever, Paul.
Yeah. Meanwhile, everyone else is
like, everybody's talking about the party the next day. Yep. You're like, man, Paul throws a wicked curveball in that indoor pool, man. Yep. Like, oh, I gotta keep my eye on you, Paul.
Like, everyone's sucking face inside, and I'm outside just being such a turd, you know? And so I want to take you. So whatever the age was, the girl was a year older than me. And at the time, I was in something called Art G&T, which was gifted and talented or whatever. And all it meant was, like, you could draw. And now I can't draw anything, which is hysterical. But I used to use it as a thing to skip class. I'd be like, oh, I got G&T. I got to go. But I didn't skip class like cool. Like, I didn't go out. I didn't go home. I didn't go, like, leave the school. I would go with my friend Adam. We would hang out in the bathroom, in the boys' bathroom. And then if anyone came, we'd just pretend we were taking dumps. Like, that was if we saw someone coming in, we'd run into the stalls and just sit there until they left. And then the other thing was I would go up. So we had a auditorium that had a stage, right? And if you went on the stage, there was a ladder that would go up to the, I think it was the catwalk it was called, you know, up on the top where, like, the lights were and stuff for the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't do anything cool there. We'd just basically sit there and, like, talk and be like, oh, this is so crazy. So,
bro, yeah. We should hang up here until they do a production of Fame.
Yeah.
You're so rad, Paul. I can't wait to get to another party and play pool ball with you. Ah, get over here.
So,
you want to go to the bathroom and act like we're having turds?
Yeah. There I am, heart beating, nervous, I'm going to get caught. And I remember this girl, Nicole, she liked me. And she was like, well, why don't we skip class and go up to the catwalk? Now, normal dude goes, okay, we're going to make out and stuff. And I didn't know. My thing, I go up there and
so you want to throw the ball?
And I bring a notebook, and I don't know if you remember, there was a game called, like, MASH, like, where you were, like, you would write, like, I don't know, like, five boys, five girls, five cars, five places you would live, and you'd, like, roll the dice or something, or whatever it is, and, like, whatever numbers came up, like, oh, Mike, you would marry Kelly, you would drive a pickup truck, you're going to live in Beverly Hills, like, it would come out like that. And I thought it was really funny to, like, do that with her up there, and we'd write names of our friend. Meanwhile, all she wanted to do was definitely, like, make out, and I couldn't do it. Then.
I would love to make out with you, but we rolled a four, and that means Keith and Jen are in a... in the Ferrari in Oklahoma.
Like, right now, I feel like bugs crawling on me as I'm talking about this. It's so douchey, you know? So then one day, we get off the bus. She lived around the corner from me. And she grabs my hand and holds it. And I'm walking, you know, stiff arm, embarrassed. Also thinking in the back of my head that somehow my mom was going to, like, swing around in, like, a cop car. Like, woo, 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 like, just.
She's in, like, the trees with, like, a bullwhip and all just slapping you because you grab a girl's hand.
Yeah. And I remember, like, being ready to kiss this girl. And I looked down and she had a very hairy arm. Like, her arms were, like, very hairy for a girl. And it completely turned me off. So I just, like, made an excuse I had to go home, and I never talked to her again.
Damn. You ghosted her because of her hairy arms.
Hairy arms. Hairy arms.
Now, were they, like, dark hairs where you could see, or were you, like, feeling her arm and, like, ugh?
No, dude, they were dark, and you could see them. Like, you could see the dark hair, which is, I mean, I'm still not into that, to be honest. But, I mean, at that point, Like at that point, eighth grade-ish, you're like a raging hormone. You should be wanting to kiss and make out with anybody, you know? Like, and I was just terrified.
That poor Italian girl you ghosted. I feel so bad for her.
Were you like that back then, or did you like? Was there anything like that?
I didn't really have like a lot of great experience with. I mean, I had low self esteem, so I just naturally thought nobody was interested in me. Like, I somewhat remember like in the middle grades, like my friend telling me, "Yo, this girl likes you, and she like." She's like been with like all the other guys. And
whoa. All right.
And I'm like, I was like going around saying like, oh, I guess that means she's with the teachers and stuff like that. And I never
probably
it's just like a weird, like I threw it away where it's kind of like, damn, I could have had some adolescence right there. I mean, I don't like it. I know you talked about like think of stuff you try to do like girls. I think like I remember when I was in the third or fourth grade, I lived right by the school, so I could like walk there and just like play in the back of the school with like the any of the slides or whatever. And I remember some other girls were there and I was trying to impress them by I'd go on the top of the slide and I would just jump off from the ladder side.
Get it.
I don't know how that would relate to I'm going to get a kiss.
I just picture you like trying like 20 attempts in a row, like jumping off the slide, girls. And then no one looks. And then like climbing back up and doing it again and again and again.
Damn it. My ACL can't take this.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because I see you telling that story and I see this like crappy smirk on your face that I'm feeling as I'm telling it. It's like the worst feeling, man. It's like, oh, I was such a loser, you know?
Mm-hmm. Easily. Like, even like as I was older, like I remember like when I, in my mid-20s, like when we go up to Wilkes-Barre, we had a kickball team up there. And there was a girl like on another team that was kind of cute or whatever. And we're going out for this, going out to a local place for some like buffalo nachos. You interested? And she's like, well, do they have anything else? And I didn't know the area. So I'm like, I don't know. You want to show up or like nothing? Debonair, anything like that?
I don't know what they have on the menu. Maybe we should call them.
Buffalo nachos. It's Johnny's Buffalo Nachos we're going to. You want Johnny's Buffalo Nachos? I didn't go into this plane thinking somebody would want something else other than that.
And there's also like nothing sexy about nachos. Like they're messy, crunchy, you know, like there's stuff everywhere.
You can't feed it to a girl and make it romantic. Like having guac all over her face as you're trying to make out with her and stuff like that.
And you can't like be like, baby, you want this bottom one as you like ladle the cheese off of it and shake the tower that's on top. Oh, you want me to dip it in this salsa and guac? And like you're loading up.
That's the last dip of sour cream, but you're worth it.
And that, you know, you when you were saying like looking across the bar and stuff, I remember like trying to do that bar thing, which I was insanely uncomfortable at, and like thinking like, again, hair standing up on my arm, thinking like if I sat there at the bar with like a beer and kind of just stared at my target, if you will, like just
well, right now I'm looking at you, I don't like your chances right now, just like staring at the, as you kind of like leaned back and you held up your beer trying to make a pose. And I'm kind of like, bro, no.
Yeah.
Bro, this.
And just like wondering, like trying, like almost like, okay, like when I went to church as a kid, I thought that like for some reason, if I stared at the crucifix, like if I really stared, maybe I was always looking like, Jesus, will you, if you're real, can you please like do something? Like, okay, if you're real, like it's this moment between me and him, can you like make the lights flicker? Can you like, can Jesus wink at me on the crucifix or give me a thumbs up or something like that? You know, like, never
happened. So you thought you had telepathic abilities to talk to our Lord and Savior.
Correct. And then I took those telepathic abilities in my early 20s and decided that if I stare at someone across the bar and kind of give them the old Brennan smile, that they would be like, come here. And no plan in place. No, like, can I buy you a drink? Like, no plan. And I just remember awkwardly sitting there, and then, like, one beer would be gone. Still trying to... second beer would be gone by myself. Before you know it, you got three or four beers in front of you. And it's just devastating. Devastating. I remember I asked my prom date, my junior prom date. I think I told you this before. I could not muscle up the balls to ask her in person. So I, in the hallway, slapped in her hand a note. One of those folded up notes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, will you go to the prom with me? And then you spend the next couple of periods in class waiting for her to pass you in the hallway again with your note. And it said yes with like a smiley face. And I was like, yeah! You know, like, it's so douchey. a note, you know?
Was it the one where you had two boxes, yes or no, and you had to wait to see which one she checked off?
It wasn't that bad. I probably had done that at some point. Like, do you like me, yes or no? But I definitely was like, well, you go to the prom with me, I really want to go with you, or something like that. And it was that note that was folded like a paper football. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just horrifically bad, man. Horrifically. Yeah. I just so thankful I have a wife, man. If this relationship ever worked out, I don't think I'm ever going to. Like, I guess the whole point is that, because we were talking long-winded thing to this guy, and I'm like, there's so many options now. You can go online. Like, if I had the ability to text, I would probably be a lot better. You know what I mean? Like, at least I'd be able to say what was on my mind without having that face-to-face letdown. You know, if anything, I was like, hey, Mike, I really, really like you. You want to meet up on Friday? If I said that back then to your face and you said no, I would be mortified and probably hide in the house for a day. That's why I was just like in school. I was just a soccer guy. And then I played in my bands. Like, I just played in my bands. I did nothing with girls.
I mean, I'm kind of the same way. Like, I even remember trying like speed dating.
Really?
Once. Yeah, I did it once. I don't feel I went back. Like, some of them I didn't have any kind of connection with. And it's like those awkward moments are like, what do you like? And you can't even come up with an answer to that. Stuff was like my best answer, but there was like some that I thought I had some decent chances, and the way it's set up, it's like you get a piece of paper and you write down like the three or four that you think you connected with, and then you get an email, and the next day you get an email, you have no matches, and I'm like, oh my god. It's like a paid service. I'm like, I paid $40 to be reminded I'm lonely.
It was, you like have the worst zero matches.
Yes, that's exact. We're like, we're sorry, nobody wants you. It was equivalent to that. I'm like,
it hurts. It's so like, bad.
I want you to call me and just be like, listen, you're a great guy, but we can't find anybody for you. That would at least been
So let's fast forward. We are both married. We're both in a happy relationship. Even this was giving me douche chills because me and my friends started talking about this. How did you? So early on in that days of pursuance, like the early days of trying to courting, I guess is a good word. You know, courting your soon to be wife. What was your strategy as far like? Even I didn't have any, because I had come out of the divorce. So I was with the same girl before that for almost all of like normal people's dating life. I got married kind of young and was married for a while, and we were together for a while before I got married. So I was like a baby calf, like going to the, you know, out to the safari, if you will.
Yeah.
So what was like your strategy to get your wife to like you?
I mean, I guess the weird thing was I just had confidence going into it, which is like a rare thing. Like, our story is a little weird because, like, as we said before, your wife was basically setting up kind of, I won't say a blind date, but like setting up a date with me and her. And even though it wasn't technically a date, we met up at a Super Bowl party at her place.
Right. My wife and my wife and I had talked and we were like, I think Mike and Izzy would be a good couple. Like they're similar, you know, they're both kind of in a similar time of life and situation. Like we're like, well, how can we? And then she really kind of like took the reins in trying to figure that out.
Yeah. So I just, it felt like she already liked me. I went into it with confidence and I was just like during the Super Bowl, I was like calm, a little flirtatious with her. Like I had no fear going into it because it was somewhat set up. So I'm like, all right, I guess she agreed to the situation that she's somewhat into me, for lack of a better term. So it's not like a regular, oh, I wonder if she likes me to ask her out. I just went into it like, yeah.
Right.
She wants them.
Yeah, I mean, I remember your after that Super Bowl party, because me and my wife, we weren't dating long, maybe a year or something. I don't know, not too long. And I remember us like being excited, like we think that went well. And like us like looking out the window in the street, like, oh, you think they're going to like kiss or talk or something like that? And like you guys got to a certain point where we couldn't see anymore. We're like, damn it, the fun's over, you know?
Yeah. And then the end part to that was I went in for a kiss. I still maintain this. My wife said she was going to go in for a kiss. Mm-hmm. I said she turned where she gave me like the cheek and I'm like, oh, okay, this is like a first date thing. So no mouth stuff. So I almost gave her kind of like a bro hug and I went back to my car.
And then you text her like, hey, you want to go out for buffalo nachos?
I know that will work. But we had this back and she's like, I was waiting for a kiss the entire night and you just gave me like this kiss on the cheek and a bro hug. And I'm like, I was trying to kiss you. And then it seemed like you turned your head. So I'm like, I thought you were giving me the sign, not yet or something like that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Oh, it's those beginning days are brutal, man. Same thing with me. Like I went out on a date with my wife. Also, I met my wife online and my profile said, I love stand-up comedy. I love my dog and I love extra large coffees. That was my profile, which is absolutely brutal if you think about
that. That's why I never signed up like online dating because like every time I give a description, I'm like, I don't know how to describe me.
You're like, I got alien head. I like
buffalo nachos. I know you'll like that.
You want to come over and watch a Dukes of Hazzard marathon? But yeah, our first date, amazing time, great time. We met at a Starbucks, which I still say it's the best first date for anyone out there is going out for coffee because it costs you almost nothing and it's face-to-face and you're actually talking. It's not the movies. It's not a loud bar. You're actually able to talk. And if the date doesn't go well, you spent, what, $7.50 on two coffees or something. So we hit it off. I'm babbling like crazy. I'm there super early. I'm like there like a half hour. She's like they're like 45 minutes late. So I had gotten my second coffee and she shows up and I'm babbling away. She's like, later on, she told me, yeah, you were like shifting all over the place. Like, and you got to remember, this was really early on into like dating again. And eventually I was like, hey, you want to go to the bar down the street, get a drink and some food? We did. Night was amazing. And in the middle of the bar, I go in for a kiss, and she does the exact same thing, kind of like a turn and kind of, no, not yet, and a smile. I'm like, oh, God. I'm like, I just blew it, completely blew it. End of the night comes. We go to Dunkin' Donuts. It was snowing out. I walk her to her car, and then I tried again, which was very un-Brennan-like. I tried again, and I got the kiss. And I maintain that she turned away from me the first time and she did not want to kiss me. And she's like, no, that never happened. I'm like, yes, it did. And sure enough, you know.
It'd be great if she gave you the cheek and like, no. And then you're like, I got to get some confidence. And like, you go to a bar and you do that beer look you just gave to me like a minute ago.
What if I
wait up, hold up. Now you want a kiss?
What if I was like, look, go on the other side of the bar, get a drink. I'll go on this side of the bar. And you tell me if you can resist this. You tell me.
Yeah. I don't get it. It's because you're sitting right next to me. You don't understand.
And
that girl on the other side, she wants me right now because I'm doing this book.
Oh, man. Well, I'm glad that situation is over in both our lives, but it is actually, it's not really fun to reminisce about, but yeah. it is fun to tell the stories, the honest stories here. Berlu, let's get out of here. We kind of reached our time here. Anything to promote before we go?
Yeah, I'll say today is Fish Scale's birthday, so I'm going to promote our former guest, the Nappy Roots, and their latest album out called 40. That's 40RTY. The Southern Rap veterans are back with their first album in near 3 years. The first single off of the album is Footy Socks and Ice Cream, and it's out right now. So go to your preferred streaming services or however you get your music and check out their latest album. It's called 40.
That's what you're going to do after this, right? Put some footy socks on, have some ice cream, watch the football game.
That's how you roll. No, but it's Thursday night. That doesn't count as a football game. But my great Mark Griffin's nephew, Brett Griffin, is about to get his first NFL start tonight.
That's right. And I will promote a guest. I guess it was last week we had Mac Brandt on from Kingdom. And various other things. He's in a new HBO series that I see a lot of people posting about. And I guess I felt like we didn't promote it as much. He's in something called Lovecraft Country. It seems to be a hit on HBO right now. So go check that out. And Berlu, you have something else to promote. You just started, I mean, when we're recording, by the time this comes out, it'll be about 5 days into it, but you have your annual pumpkin spice whatever. So give us a little insight into that.
So 31 days of me and the wifey doing different pumpkin spice items. We do a little chatting in between, and then we give a review, a new product every night. This is my fifth year I've been doing this.
Which is crazy. I remember you like... you know, doing it solo on your balcony, like you'd be like, okay, I'm eating something. It's kind of quiet right now, you know, like doing. So it's pretty amazing. It's been 5 years already.
What's really amazing is I've been getting 31 different items every year. I've literally not repeated once.
Yeah,
so
that's 150 something items, you know.
Pretty much, yeah. So we do it every day during the week, Monday through Friday. We do it at 5:30 on the weekends. We'll probably do it in the mornings. I'll announce what times we're going to do it and so forth. But you know, it's on my Facebook page, Michael Berlu Random Stuff. And like I said, you know, it's a cute little thing. It's about 5 to 10 minutes long. And you know, just something cute to brighten your day, just to get out there. And then, yes, I'm a basic bitch, if you will.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, we'll put the link up on the Facebook, and maybe we'll have some Instagram stuff to kind of share with you and whatnot. So go check out Berlu's little pet project there, pumpkin spice, whatever. So that's it, guys. I want to thank Blake Saul for coming on the show. Go check out their album. Guys, another week in the books. We have so many amazing guests, let me tell you. We are booked through December at this point with a lot of people. So we're very excited to talk to a lot of them, and I hope you guys will continue to listen to us and review us and all that stuff. So, guys,
give us some ideas.
Hey, give us some ideas. That's it, man. So that's it, man. Life is funny. Laugh at it, and keep the wind at your back, guys.
life.